Hey everyone, welcome to this edition of the Not So Common Podcast. I'm Pat Contry. This is a solo edition for Tuesday, November 13th, 2018, a week out of the midterm election voting. I hope you voted. I'm Pat Contry. I was a little sick over the weekend, but you know what picked me up? Seeing my buddy Eli Manning win a football game on Monday Night Football against the lowly 49ers. Eli Manning, I know he has half a brain cell, but he's my guy. He's a legend in New York. He won two Super Bowls, taking down the evil Patriots twice, two of the greatest Super Bowls ever. That first one, they beat that undefeated Patriots team. And even people say, oh, Eli was just carried by the defense. Not that second one, buddy. 2011, Eli Manning was a beast. He was like an MVP caliber quarterback for a few years. And that was one of the years where he put things together. And Eli never really had any sort of elite running attack or wide receiver core for those two Super Bowl runs. Tiki Barber left the year before in 2006 because he was a prima donna baby. And then the closest they had was Plaxico Burress. And he wasn't best of the best. He was good. But that 2011 team, there was slim pickings there. We got Manningham and a couple other guys. Anyway, so Eli's always going to be my guy. I'll defend that idiot until the death. He's my idiot, though. You can't make fun of him. Only I can. But, you know, Eli's 37 years old, so he probably has only a couple of seasons left at most. And we'll see if the Giants even keep him after this year or trade him away to some team that might be ready to win now. Eli's still good if he has any sort of protection. When people always talk about Eli sucking as a quarterback or he's washed up. Yeah, you'd be washed up, too, if you got sacked, 50 times a season. You would be washed up, too, when your offensive line gives you half a second to throw the ball. Brady couldn't perform in the conditions that Eli Manning has had to endure the past 3-4 years. So I don't want to hear it. That's people that don't know anything about football that just say, "Oh, Eli sucks. He was never good." No quarterback is good without an offensive line, unless you're like Aaron Rodgers or Michael Vick and you can scramble around. But that's a rarity when it comes to the quarterback position. And this is not necessarily a sports podcast, but I thought I'd get it out there. People have already dialed out there. So the midterms happened. Oh, quick update about Halloween. So the Halloween thing happened last, what was that? Was that 2 weeks ago Halloween happened? It was kind of surprising that I didn't get many groups of like actual children in the neighborhood. I got a lot of groups of 13-year-old girls, 14-year-old girls, maybe like 8th graders, 7th graders. And that's fine, but I wanted to give out candy to children. And there was maybe only 3 or 4 sets of children. I don't know if that's because it was too late, but it seemed like the trick-or-treating didn't really start until after like 6. It was like 6 to 8. It was nothing like 4 to 5:30. It didn't seem like there was anything going on. When I was a kid, I ran out the door at 3 o'clock, and I was trick-or-treating, for 6 hours. Screw homework. You got to go out and trick-or-treat. Maybe it's different on a Friday or Saturday. I spoke about that last time, how that's really the prime days for Halloween is really Friday or Saturday. Wednesday could be the worst day for Halloween out of them all because it's right plop in the middle of the week there. So, okay, elections happen, all right? Let's see. The Republicans gained 2 in the Senate. That was what pretty much people were predicting because it was a strong map for the Republicans, for the GOP. This time out, it's going to be a lot rougher in 2 years. But the Democrats did extremely well. Remember, 6 years for a senator, every 2 years for House representatives. So the Democrats did exceedingly well. The blue wave, was it a blue wave? It doesn't matter. They're up plus 32 seats now. They took back the Senate, and they might get, I think, closer to 40 when it's all said and done. They still have to count votes here and there. So, but they regained 32. They went plus 32 overall. And I think they held. If what I read was right, the Democrats didn't lose one incumbency throughout the U.S. in the House, which is an amazing statistic when you think about that. That no Republican beat an incumbent Democrat throughout the U.S. So voters were not pleased for the past couple of years, and usually the Democrats historically don't come out for the midterms. That's always been the strike against motivating the Democratic base was that, oh, they don't vote in the midterms. They only vote for the president. Not this time around. Something's been annoying them. I'm not sure what orange thing could be that they could be upset with, but that's what happened. So I'm going on Ballotpedia.com, which is an excellent resource, by the way. Ballotpedia is good because Ballotpedia lets you know in your own district, like what measures and propositions are up for elections, what representatives, who represents what. It's very in depth, though. That's good. So this is basically the summary. Republicans expand the control of the Senate by 2. Democrats take control of the House. U.S. Senate election in Arizona switched for Democrat Kristen Sinema over Martha McSally. There's recounts still going on in Florida for Senate, Governor, and Agricultural Commission for all three within 0.5% points in Florida. Democrats flipped 7 governorships. It was very lopsided before. I think it was like 30 to 20 or 32 to 18, something like that. So now it's about even there. Georgia's still too close to call. Republicans flipped 1 governorship in Alaska. There's a lot of other stuff going on here in terms of House legislatures and things of that nature, state legislatures. But most swung more Democratic this time out. There's only one state left with a divided legislature, and it's Minnesota. Okay, there you go. So it was a good night for the Democratic Party for sure. Republicans, they didn't lose any seats really overall in the Senate, so that's good for them. But no one expected them to. Next time out, I don't think it's going to be as nice as a map for them. Oh, well, legalized marijuana in Michigan. There you go. I'm not sure why it's not legalized everywhere at this point, but there you go. 367, here's an important one. 367 state legislative seats flipped Democratic. 367. Historically, a wave election at the state legislative level occurs when one party loses at least 494. 367 isn't nothing to sneeze at, though. That's a lot. Remember your state house isn't what you vote on within the state. That's what that refers to, you know, which affects your life more than you think. You know, you get to vote for your state representatives as well every once in a while in the state houses. So there you have it there. But the most important part of the 2008 midterms was most important to my life was Proposition 7 in California, which was to permanently banish us falling back with daylight savings. The daylight savings measure, that's right. Proposition 7, which is a permanent daylight savings time, which means once you spring forward 1 year, that's it. You're done. Clocks are set forward. It's dark in the morning. It's light at night. And that's how everyone should want it. And that's the best thing for all. I am so depressed now. And we just, it was only a week and a half ago where we pushed the clocks back on that Saturday night, whatever it is, 2 a.m. becomes 1 a.m. It sucks. It sucks because now when I leave, when I go to yoga, it gets dark at you know, 5 o'clock, but it gets dark at 4:30 now. But when you get out of yoga or your place of business, when I used to work in an office, you get out at 6, you can't tell if it's 6 o'clock at night or midnight. You can't tell. It's depressing. No one likes it. It should be light out still. I'm recording this at 6:50 PM Pacific Standard Time. And there's no, besides, you want to talk about workers on farms, maybe. That's really the only advantage to this, of falling back and switching this still. What was it, like 15 years ago, they shortened the amount of time that we have this awful darkness at night now. they shortened it. It used to fall back with your clocks before Halloween. So screw the kids trick-or-treating, right? That's what they thought. But now it's after Halloween, and it used to be like after Easter, but now it's before Easter. So it's truncated. They truncated by about, I think, 3 to 4 weeks off the top of my head. So that's good. So it's no longer 6 months. It's like 5 months that we have it. But there's really no reason for it to exist anymore. And when they look at all the research, there's so much more energy savings when you shorten the amount of time, because when people come home, if it's still light out, then there's less electricity being used. They don't have to turn on all the lights. And that's what they discover, which makes sense. You can say, well, Pat, in the morning, they'll be using more lights. But yeah, but most people go to work. They leave their domicile and they'll have more. Most people spend more time at home at night with lights on versus that when they were in the morning. You know, talking like 5-6 hours versus a couple hours. So when you look at it like that, then yes, you want to keep the lights off as much as you can. So this doesn't mean that California is going to go through with this. This means, though, that if this comes up federally, I believe, let's see. A yes vote supports allowing the California state legislature to change the dates and times of the daylight savings time period as consistent with federal law by a two-thirds vote and establish permanent year-round daylight savings time in California by a two-thirds vote if a federal law is changed to allow for permanent daylight savings time. So basically it opens a door for when a federal law goes into effect, then California is already set. Like, oh yeah, we're waiting, feds, we've been waiting forever on this. And that's really the best for all. It's really the most depressing when you were a child. When you were when I was like 8-year-old, 9-year-old, chubby little Pat. You get home from school. I got home off the bus by, it was something like 2:20, 2:25. We got out of school like 2 o'clock, my Catholic school. And it wasn't that much of a bus ride, like 15, 20 minutes. We'll just say 2:30. So when the fall came, you're back in school, you get your sweatshirt on, you go play your, you know, your street football, your street tennis, which is more of a street tennis on the asphalt was more of a summer activity. But, you know, street football, we still play wiffle ball, but street hockey we played. It was or just playing tag with your friends or hanging out. I had friends like 6 blocks away. You walk over, you hang out, you play Nintendo, whatever. It was fine before you switched to daylight savings. Because before, it would get dark at, you know, like 5:30, 5:45. By that point in time, when you were like a 7, 8-year-old, 9-year-old, you were already eating dinner. You came home around 5:15, usually. 5:30, the latest, we were at home. We were eating before 6. And then you did homework afterwards. At least that's what I did. I was doing homework, you know, like 6:45 for like an hour. You watch a little TV, you go to bed, you go back to school. God, I do not miss going to school. I do not miss doing homework. I have two recurring nightmares only in my life, or at least bad dreams, not necessarily nightmares where you wake up in a cold sweat. Number one, for bad dreams is in grade school, missing the school bus leaving. So going back inside, and you left the book, you had to go to the principal's office to talk to someone, and you see your bus pulling away when you're like 8 years old. And that happened once or twice when I was a child, except they would just call your mom, she'd come and pick you up, it wasn't that big a deal. But that's my bad dream number one, and I can still picture it in my head how that looks from the school, seeing the parade of yellow school buses pull out and go into the street. That's bad dream number one for Pat. But bad dream number two isn't grade school related, but it is schoolwork. Bad dream number two is that I'm back in college. It's like a Sunday night. And it's like, oh my God, I had a 10-page paper that's due tomorrow and I haven't worked on it yet. So those are the two bad dreams in Pat's life right now that I still have. It has to do with obligations to doing poor work that you're not in control of, or missing out on your bus ride home so you can go home and get even chubbier, a mom baking you nice brownies or cookies before going out and playing street hockey for an hour. But it stunk with daylight savings once you push the clocks back, because then it gets dark at, like, I think the worst was when it would get too cold to go out maybe early December in New Jersey. Then, you know, with climate change now, I have no idea. I mean, before I moved, it was like I was wearing shorts on Christmas Eve in like 2008. But if you could stay outside, you come in when it was dark. You know, if you're 8, 9 years old, you get a little older, 10, 11, 12, your parents give you a little more responsibilities, at least mine did. But at 4:15, it would start getting dark out. And by 4:25, 4:30, you would think it was 8 o'clock at night once you got to like early December. So you couldn't basically play again outside until a month after December 21st, which is winter solstice, which is the shortest day of the year. Once you got to like mid-January, it started getting normal again. I know it was cold out, but so it just made your leisure time as a kid, which was extremely invaluable, especially when you go to awful school every day. It's like you're in prison. It made that leisure time, even that extra half hour, meant so much to you as a kid. The difference between going outside and playing for an hour and a half or 2.5 hours is a huge gap when you're a child. You really make those extra minutes last when you're a kid. And this is, to me, if this happened when I was this getting a permanent daylight savings, if this happened when I was 6 years old, this would change my life. This will change children's lives out there. And plus, it'll be safer for children, by the way. Yes, in the morning, you walk into your bus stop, it's a little more, you know, it's a little more dark out. You got to be careful. Everyone's got a flashlight on their cell phone, or you buy a little flashlight for a kid, a little LED flashlight. They'll be fine. No one was going to get hurt. Maybe a couple of kids get killed. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, This is more important. It's more important. Permanent daylight savings time. Spring forward, but never back again. I am so thrilled at this pass. I didn't even look up the rest of what's going on with anything. To me, this is more important than my House of Representatives. Well, my congressman, this is more important to me. This is a weird lifelong sort of pet peeve of mine is the daylight savings shift back and forth, especially in the fall. So there you have it there. This is actually more of a sad note now. The death of Stan Lee at 95. Stan Lee, of course, was a huge contributor to Marvel. First, it was timely. He started in the late 30s, I believe. He was more like a lower assistant intern. He built himself up. And obviously, he's in recent memory been known for all his cameos since he's been out of really writing comics for quite a while now. His recent cameos in all the MCU films and other films too. It's like 25 to 30 films. He's had cameos in all 20 MCU films. The two Fantastic Four movies, he's had the cameos. The three Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. I believe the two Amazing Spider-Man movies. He also had cameos in one or two of the X-Men films as well. They've kept him out of most of them, but he's been in a couple of those. So that's how people pay reverence to him when they see him on screen with these cameos. It's like, oh my God, it's Stan Lee. And from what people say, Stan Lee was a very nice guy. He was very progressive in terms of what he represented and what he brought to light in his creations. You know, X-Men he created or co-created was an allegory for racism and civil rights struggles in the 60s. He created Black Panther. Enough said there. That's a saying, enough said. Fantastic Four kicked off the Marvel Age, co-created with Jack Kirby, which I believe was a play on the Challengers of the Unknown, which he did for DC Comics, which is a big comic that Frank likes DC's Doom Patrol, Challengers of the Unknown, and Fantastic Four, these like groups of superhero teams. And of course, my favorite, Spider-Man. So to me, what Stan Lee helped do in the 60s was create a comic book world so different than DC, where it was more science-based, it was more down-to-earth, the superheroes had real problems, the superheroes didn't necessarily all get along with each other. So the DC world, it's like, oh, they're all titans, they're all gods and goddesses walking the earth. Superman and Green Lantern and Wonder Woman and Flash, they all have these godlike powers that are based on mysticism or magic in some way. There are exceptions to that rule, of course, but by and large, Batman is an exception using technology and money, but he's like the only one of like those big DC guys where he's really like one of those guys using tech to get ahead. On the Marvel side, though, everything was based somewhat in science once you got to the 60s. You know, gamma radiation, gamma bomb for the Incredible Hulk, which was a play on, you know, scare of nuclear annihilation and the Cold War. Iron Man using technology, solely technology, the Fantastic Four get beamed with cosmic rays in space. They were astronauts. So you saw a slight shift there. There were normal people that got endowed with these amazing powers, but mostly based on science. There's some exceptions. Yeah, Spider-Man was bit by radioactive spider, but then Peter Parker created his own web shooters as a smart kid and created his own web fluid based and obviously sci-fi stuff, but, you know, at least it was like, oh, this kid built his own web shooters. So it was great that Stan Lee had that much influence because that really kick-started the comics superhero boom again. In the 50s, it was dying out. It died out totally with Marvel. Was it Captain America went away? What was it, 54? Captain America went away. And then for the next 6 years, there really weren't any superheroes with Marvel. They were doing horror comics and monsters and creatures and things of that nature. But then 1960 rolls around, 61, and then all of a sudden you have the Fantastic Four explode onto the scene, and then you follow that with Avengers and Spider-Man real quickly, then you're off and running. And that really, really started modern comics as we know and love today. Yes, DC still had Superman comics and Wonder Woman and Flash and Captain Marvel was there, the DC Captain Marvel, who's now Shazam. But those were sort of stuck in that creative rut where they hadn't changed in like 20, 25 years. They were still doing the same old, same old. Superman shows up in a comic, he beats some guy up, and the next comic, the same thing, he beats some guy up. Marvel grounded it a bit more, where all the superheroes kind of were aware of each other more, but then it was a bigger deal when they came across each other by surprise, things of that nature. And yes, some comic fans will say, yeah, that happened with DC. But with Marvel, I think at least in the beginning, they did a better job of, at least when they started introducing all these characters, they made it a bigger deal. It was like, oh, this is the first time, like an early Avengers where like Spider-Man shows up and like fights Giant Man, for example, things like that. Or an early Daredevil comic, excuse me, early Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, I think it's 16, where Daredevil shows up, for example, still in his yellow costume. So that they had all these, like, it was really like how they almost portray it in the movies, where you have nothing. In the Marvel superhero scene went from nothing. All the superheroes disappeared. Submariner gone. The original Human Torch gone. Captain America on ice, which they, you know, retconned after he came back. Gone. And then all of a sudden, it's here. They're all here. They're appearing one after the other, which is kind of what Vision in Civil War was talking about. Oh, well, Iron Man shows up, then all these other heroes show up, and all the villains show up. So that really was not all to Stan Lee. You had people like Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, obviously, and others that were helping with that. But he co-created Doctor Strange and X-Men, Fantastic Four, Incredible Hulk, Daredevil, Spider-Man, X-Men. So you can't imagine the Marvel Universe without that, let alone these movies, just the comics I grew up with. And with Peter Parker specifically, you know, he was, you know, nearest and dearest to Stan Lee. Peter Parker sort of became the everyman sort of a geeky nerd character that didn't really exist before in comic books. You know, he wasn't Superman. He wasn't Batman, a billionaire with a bunch of toys. Peter Parker, you know, is a high school 15, 16-year-old kid that gets picked on by Flash Thompson. Liz doesn't like him. Liz Allen thinks he's a nerd. So he pines after the hot high school girl doesn't like him. You know, he's a loner. He's a nerd. Nobody likes him. So when you're a kid growing up in any era, that's not really a common sort of superhero trope. At least back then, it was non-existent. So I think that's what appealed to me as a child, because I was not necessarily a loner, but I was picked on. I had glasses. I was nerdy. You knew other kids that were nerdy got picked on. And so I think that's what drew people to Spider-Man. And then Spider-Man, though, also had, even though he became, you know, a successful superhero, and, you know, the police were still after him in some aspects. J. Jonah turned the city against him. Being a superhero, he couldn't reveal his identity. So that meant, like, oh, I'm a superhero, I can get all the girls and Liz will like me. Nope, couldn't do that. He couldn't beat up Flash Thompson, even though he technically could. You know, with great power comes great responsibility. That's one of the best lines in the history of comics. And that's all Stan Lee's influence there. How do we make people identify more with our superheroes in our world? Give them the common man rub, so to speak, to make people more endeared to them. And that's why, you know, characters like Spider-Man are so much more beloved today than characters like Green Lantern or Martian Manhunter or even Flash. These are fine characters, but they don't really get people's juices flowing like Spider-Man or Iron Man or even Daredevil. You know, these more everyman people that have problems in their personal lives or things they have to overcome. And being a superhero doesn't always help. Iron Man gets alcoholism at one point. He's got a huge ego. Peter Parker becomes a superhero because he ends up slacking and not stopping a robber, ends up killing Uncle Ben. You know, there's a lot of tragedy with these characters. And also in the Spider-Man comics, there was other issues tackled. Not just the Spider-Man, actually. In Daredevil, they tackled some issues there. What was the famous one where a Vietnam vet comes back and becomes blind, and then Matt Murdock has to like mentor him and help him out. Stan Lee made sure that Captain America during the Vietnam War era wasn't just pro rah rah USA. He gave Captain America conscience and saying, no, I don't agree with this. I'm not going to go over there and fight. That's why Captain America, it wasn't like World War II where Captain America was punching out, you know, Nazis. Captain America wasn't punching out the Viet Cong during the Vietnam War. He was out of that. He went off on his own during that period. And this is all Stan Lee's influence. Again, obviously I talked about the X-Men and that being just a huge metaphor for the civil rights movement and racism in the 60s. And there's more. I'm probably forgetting some. But you see, this is all why Marvel Comics from the 60s sort of took the lead at that point. And I, even one-off comic books, comic stories. Fantastic Four, and I'm not saying Stanley didn't write all these, but he wrote a chunk of these. Fantastic Four number, let's see, 51. Stanley wrote that. This Man, This Monster. Check it. It's a one-shot story. Has to do with a, let's see. There's a scientist that's jealous of the Thing. They swap bodies. Ben then he goes out without being the Thing for a while this other guy takes over, and then the scientist ends up sacrificing himself at the end, and everyone still thinks he's really Ben, but he's not. And then Ben loses his normal life again for the second time. It's a one-shot story. It's a tragic story on both ends of both Ben Grimm and this scientist that gets these powers but can't follow through with being the heroic Thing and then sacrifices himself. It's a beautiful story, but the point is that these are stories that weren't common before people like Stan Lee got involved. Made you think a little bit. They weren't just, you know, the super villain of the week beat them up story. These were a little deeper than that. Amazing Spider-Man, what was it, 96, 97, I want to say? 96, 97. I own one of these. What is one is it? There was a story. It was either 97, 98, 96, 97, where Harry Osborn, Peter Parker's friend, becomes a drug addict. At the time, that was huge taboo to discuss. This is the late 60s, right? So it must have been 68, 69, or 70. So the Comics Code Authority didn't give them the little stamp. So the Comics Code Authority started in the 50s, and they had to approve every comic storyline after they had all the freaking, you know, federal fucking almost tribunals about, you know, violence in comic books, because they found one deranged kid with a stack of horror comic books from the 50s, and he took an axe to someone. So you couldn't come out with the comic unless it had a Comics Code Authority approval. It was a censorship thing. You couldn't have blood, overt amounts of blood. You couldn't have drug references, sex, nudity, things of that nature. But for that comic book, it was 96, Amazing Spider-Man 96, 98. For that comic book, they said, screw it. We think this is important to talk about drug addiction. We don't care what the Comics Code Authority is going to do. We're going to come out with it anyway. And that's what they did. And so for that reason, it's an important comic for that purpose. I'm trying to do Control F here and find this in this article, because I have one of the issues. I have not read all three. I think I have 96 or 97 there. Oh, it was 1971. Comics Code Authority refused to grant its seal because the stories depicted drug use. The anti-drug context was considered irrelevant. So Lee had the story published without the Comics Code seal. The comic sold well, Marvel won praise for its socially conscious efforts. The CCA subsequently loosened the code to permit negative depictions of drugs among New Freedom. So this is, again, I'm not going to be able to do justice to Stan Lee, and this is mostly off the top of my head, but these are the things that Stan Lee would champion. Progressiveness. Let's push the envelope about grounding our heroes and what stories we can tell here. It's not just about, you know, brawny superhero A punches supervillain B in the face. Like, that's where stories end up, but that's not what drives the story. That's not what keeps people coming back to read these stories. You have to make the characters interesting when they're in and out of their costumes. So he had a full life. He served in the Signal Corps in the Army during World War II. 95 years old. I know someone that has been around for signings. Nice guy. I think people are sad because they won't be able to see him in future Marvel movies, but a source tells me, and I think his manager said that, and he said that they've pre-filmed not just for the next few Marvel movies coming out. I think they pre-filmed a tons of cameos with Stan Lee, because obviously they knew the guy was getting older. He's 95, hard to get around. He's in elderly care. So they filmed a bunch, I heard, just random, you know, scenes of Stan Lee in different locations, so you can have a superhero like sort of look on the street and cut to him doing something, which is smart to do that, and then it keeps Stan Lee's legacy around more. I feel like now going out to my bookshelf and reading my best of Marvel comics, it was like an all-one volume I got when I was like 20 or 18 years old, and I had some of these issues I talked to you about, like This Man, This Monster, Fantastic Four 51. I can't say check it out on YouTube, because I don't know where you can look at these comics without buying a compilation. But thank you, Stan Lee. I tweeted out you've you inspire so many to create. You've obviously entertained millions of people through the comics you helped create and stories. And the same goes for Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby, and all those guys from back then. You couldn't do much without the artist or the writer. It's a 1-2 combination there. And Steve Ditko passed away, was it last year or earlier this year too, unfortunately. So you're kind of leaving, all the Silver Age guys are unfortunately now disappearing as well. The Silver Age of comics, which is known as, what's it, 60 to 69. That's how you define the Silver Age there. Or what we know of comics now, basically. That's when it started. Yeah, here's to you, Stan. You had a long life. Sounded like a pretty good dude overall. And you're going to be remembered, and if not comics, just in films forever, and all these cameos that people go nuts for. NordVPN, you've heard me talking about them before. It's what I use to keep myself safe online, and you can too. If you care about your privacy and the security of your information, NordVPN is now offering 66% off a 2-year plan when you go to nordvpn.com/pat. Or use code PAT at checkout. VPN is a virtual private network. Today, having one is more critical than ever. If you're doing anything online, your info and browsing habits are out there for people to get a hold of. And ISPs can track our every move and use our private info to their benefit by selling our browsing habits or even slowing down throttling the sites we visit. When you use NordVPN, you have access to over 4,000 super speedy servers in 62 countries, and those connections secure your information using military-grade encryption. That means your information and what you do online is nearly impossible to track. I use the NordVPN app on my phone and my laptop. It's available on iOS devices, Android, PC, Mac. It's unlimited bandwidth, and you get a money-back guarantee. And one account, just one account, lets you protect up to 6 devices. All right? There's a special offer. Again, 66% off a 2-year plan. Go to nordvpn.com/pat or use code PAT at checkout and get what PC Mag calls the top editor's choice for a VPN solution. Go try it. I'm proud to be working with ButcherBox. ButcherBox delivers healthy, 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef, free-range organic chicken, and heritage breed pork. The incredible quality of ButcherBox meats starts with a commitment to raising animals humanely and free of antibiotics and hormones. Each ButcherBox comes with at least 8 to 11 pounds of meat. That's a lot of meat, which is enough for 24 individual size meals. You can choose from 5 different box types: all beef, beef and chicken, beef and pork, mixed box, or a custom box where you choose your own cuts. Again, this is high quality, healthy protein you can trust. 100% grass fed and finished free range organic. Let's try that again. I'm probably working with ButcherBox. ButcherBox delivers healthy, 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef, free-range organic chicken, and heritage breed pork. The incredible quality of ButcherBox meats starts with a commitment to raising animals humanely and free of antibiotics and hormones. Each ButcherBox comes with at least 8 to 11 pounds of meat, which is enough for 24 individual size meals. You can choose from 5 different types: all beef, beef and chicken, beef and pork, a mixed box, or a custom box where you choose your own cuts. Again, this is high quality, healthy protein you can trust. 100% grass fed and finished beef and free range organic chicken. Heritage free breed pork. What does that mean? It's old world pork before they bred out all the fat and flavor. So that's the good pork. That's the good stuff. You can cook with peace of mind knowing that you're feeding your family healthy, high quality meat. Again, there's 5 different boxes to choose from. I went to the website. It's all laid out very clearly, and it tells you what you get with each box: the types of meats, the cuts, and the amount of each cut. These are quality meats you would not find in a typical grocery store. I go shopping at my local grocer, and you might get lucky once in a while and find something grass-fed. Organic, not so much, but it's going to cost you a lot of money if you do manage to find it. Here, it's convenient, easy to have these high-quality meats delivered right to your doorstep. It's only about $5 per meal. All right, here's a special offer: for $20 off your first box and a package of free bacon in every box for the life of your subscription, free bacon. Go to butcherbox.com/notsocommon and enter code notsocommon at checkout. Again, that special offer is $20 off your first box and a package of free bacon in every box for the life of your subscription. Free bacon is like the best phrase ever. Go to butcherbox.com/notsocommon and enter code notsocommon at checkout. This is great news. I spoke about this on the last podcast, about China reversing their stance on rhino and tiger parts for medicinal use. So there was an insane story that came out where the WWF, the World Wildlife Fund, was upset about, and everyone else was, about China was going to ease their 25-year ban on rhino and tiger parts. And they said, well, it was going to be for, you know, tigers and rhinos in captivity, that you can use the parts for that. And that didn't fly with anyone, because that opens up the black market even more. You're sort of easing, you're allowing people to get away with things. You're creating this gray area. And there's not many rhinos left to begin with, or tigers in the wild. So why would you can't give an inch on these issues. This is not, this isn't stuff that's curing cancer. This is all bullshit. These fake medicines. And everyone knows that. So there's no reason to allow this. So everyone got up in arms about this policy. So fortunately, at least for now, China is reversing their stance. According to the Washington Post, China makes a U-turn on legalizing tiger and rhino trade following international outcry. Thank goodness for that. China has halted a directive that partially legalized the domestic trade in farmed rhinoceros and tiger parts. A senior official in China's cabinet said in a state media interview Monday that implementation of an October directive reviving the market for the endangered animal parts has been postponed after study. They did not, though, specify how long the delay would last. This official said the Chinese government has long been dedicated to the cause of wildlife protection and has made achievements recognized by the world. Well, then you can't do this. You have to realize this was a mistake. The State Council unveiled a directive late October, ending a 25-year ban on trade in rhino and tiger parts. And then there was an outcry. The conservation groups applauded China's latest reversal. China was praised last year for banning the elephant ivory trade altogether. Jesus Christ, what year is it? They were still had an ivory trade? I saw an ivory. I went to an estate sale recently. It was probably legal because it was so old. It was probably from the 30s or 20s. I saw this elephant carved thing with ivory panels on the side of the elephant. So it was like the rucksack you put on a horse for an elephant for travel, transportation. I could tell it was ivory. It was browned and golden and old. But it was ivory. I felt weird even looking at that and wanting to purchase that. It's probably fine. I mean, that elephant that they farmed that from or killed for that ivory has been dead since, you know, the 20s. But I felt weird looking at that. And it is, again, it's legal to own its antique ivory things before, like, all these laws went into place. I just felt weird about that still. It's just wrong to me to do that. You're wasting these creatures that it's not like there's a million of these guys out there. There's not. You can't go to the store and buy more elephants and rhinos when they're gone from the earth. You can't do that. So I'm very happy about this reversal. And plus, it's just creepy to raise something as beautiful and as rare as a tiger in captivity just to, you know, kill it for its fucking, you know, tiger balls or its bones. And they're not going to wait for them to die out of natural causes. You know, if you want to make that argument, they wait for that. They're not going to do that. You know, this isn't like, this isn't like veal. At least someone's going to eat it for some purpose of value. And, you know, veal's kind of a creepy thing when you really get down to it. I don't eat veal that much. Like, once you're going to an Italian restaurant, or Frank will make it. But you see my point. At least you're consuming it for some good. This is, you know, hocus pocus medicine that no one should believe in anymore. So there you have it. Good on China for reversing this, but that's why you can't let you can't give an inch on this stuff, on this conservation. This is not a joke. I always say that if I ever became like a rich philanthropist, my money's going towards conservation efforts. It's going towards San Diego Zoo. It's going to getting, you know, more animals back out in the wild. And I hate to say, you know, I'll hire some mercenaries. I'm joking, but hiring some mercenaries to go out to Africa and protect these animals. I think there's some out there, some ex-military U.S. They go out there and they're there by the elephants. They don't, if poachers come near them, it's going to be trouble. All right. This is going to be a somewhat short NASCOM podcast, I believe. But we have some questions. This is from... Oh, no, I got one more weird story. You know, weirder than a reaction to a mobile game. It's a Japanese man happily married to 16-year-old hologram singer. Okay. So this is a guy who married literally a hologram. All right? This guy's name is... Akiyoko Kondo. We'll just call him Kondo. Had a $17,600 ceremony a wedding ceremony. That's more than some people's real weddings. He's a 35-year-old guy. He wed a 16-year-old virtual reality singer named Hatsune Miku. 40 guests gathered at Tokyo Hall to watch this person, Kondo, tie the knot with an animated character, according to Geek.com, presented in the form of a portable stuffed doll. So, okay, I thought at least there'd be like, this would be like sort of a Michael Jackson hologram performance where you'd actually see the hologram there, which is like all the rage now. But no, he actually just had a stuffed doll with him. Described the... So the news reporter there described the plush dolls having saucer eyes and a lengthy aquamarine pigtails. I never cheated on her, and I've always been in love with Miku-san, according to Kondo, who uses a Japanese honorific suffix meant as a title of respect. I've been thinking about her every day, he said a week after the wedding. All right. Hatsune Miku is the name of a Vocaloid software voice bank developed by Krypton Future Media, and its anthropomorphic anime character. Okay. So he went for an anime character based upon Vocaloid software voice bank. A voice bank. So not even like, this isn't like a popular like cartoon character at all. This is something, it's like a mascot for a company, it sounds like. Okay. Her personification has been marketed as a virtual idol and has performed on stage at concerts as an animated projection. All right. Kondo has been living with a moving, talking hologram of Miku, which floats in a $2,800 desktop device since March. They have hologram desktop devices? I can have one for Ian. You know, he can just call in. I'll just have a hologram Ian. Nate Doggett here on the when we do the CU podcast. I'm in love with the whole concept of Hatsune Miku, but I got married to the Miku of my house. The school administrator explained. This guy's a school administrator? He considers himself an ordinary married man. Okay. This is what I'm getting to here. I'm really not trying to take shots at this guy. But there's always something beneath the surface when it comes to these stories. Always something. There must be some people that can't come forward and say they want to hold a wedding. I want to give them a supportive push, Kondo said. So I think he believes there'll be more plush hologram weddings after this. The hologram device manager issued the couple a marriage certificate for this, by the way. He claims, here you go, this is what happened. He claims a woman at his former workplace bullied him into a nervous breakdown, and he vowed never to marry until he met Miku. Okay. I'm going to pretend I'm speaking to Kondo. Kondo? Okay, buddy. Someone bullied you, but, okay? A woman bullied you. Maybe you liked the woman. She was mean to you. Doesn't mean you got to go off the deep end, buddy. There's other women out there for you. A lot of fish in the sea. We don't need to be marrying holograms. I'm not sure I'm going too far here, but I love knowing no boundaries, but a hologram that you're holding up a plush doll, if you want a real woman, as soon as they Google your name and find this article, all bets are off, Kondo, buddy. I'm trying to help you out here. We can go out to the bar together. I'll buy you a drink. We'll have some fish tacos. I'll introduce you to a friend or two, maybe. Maybe you can toss the plush away, buddy. This isn't doing any favors. You might think it's a good idea now. You might be filling that hole in your soul right now due to this woman bullying you, but they're gonna Google your name and it's not gonna be good news. Whenever the Japanese version of Tinder, do they have one? I don't know. The Japanese Bumble, if they have one, this is not going to bode well for you in the future. You're going to have to hire one of those forensic companies to scrub the internet of this article. And me talking about this, I'd be scrubbed. All right, that's all I'm going to say. Man, Kondo, buddy. You can't let that one bad experience get to you. Can't let it happen to you. Other fish in the sea, maybe other holograms, I guess. All right, we're going to do some Q&A. This is from at Kate Cora. What advice would you give to people about coping with stressful events in the news? I wouldn't necessarily say when it comes to stressful events in the news to just turn it off. I'll bundle this with John Riggs asking about, you know, if the fires have affected me, the Southern California fires. They haven't, but I've seen them affect other people. And they're only, to me, like 2.5 hours away, 3 hours. And there have been fires in Southern California and San Diego County before. You want to be aware of what's going on in the world. It's important to you to know what happens in the midterms or whatever. If the president comes out and says something really ignorant about the California fires, instead of saying something hopeful to bring us together and to acknowledge pain and suffering and loss, I know that's setting too high a bar for the president. But when these things happen, at some point you have to take it in stride because you have to still live your life every day. And I've said this before in the podcast, I firmly believe that good happens inside out. So it happens in interpersonal communication and interaction with your friends and your family and people that your coworkers, and if you're a school teacher, your students, people you interact with at your job, that you pay it forward in a way, and you just try to be cheerful to people. And that sort of not only alleviates the pain, but it shows that the world, while sometimes can seem too big and too hurtful, when you boil down to it, you only can control what you can control. And in your daily life, if you only focus on that when it's tough, I think that's a good coping mechanism, because how do I put this into words? Not that the bad things will go away, but the bad things in the world around you, thinking about them to such a huge extent definitely won't make your daily life any better. It won't. Again, you don't have to be ignorant of things, but don't focus too much on those things you don't like at the current point in time, or else you'll just be a miserable person no matter what. And don't bank on those big things in the news. Don't think that how you feel day to day can only change if those things change. So if you hate the current political party in power, you shouldn't base your whole existence on that. Your whole notion of happiness shouldn't exist upon that. There's so much more out there. You're wasting so much if you go that far. I'm not saying, Kate, you're doing that. But in general, you just can't bank on that. If there's a bad election, you can't go crying about it for too long. You gotta pull yourself up by your bootstraps, get on with your life, help where you can. If you see injustice in the world, you help where you can. But you have to remain positive, because then people don't want to be around you. And this is whatever your affiliation, whatever you're talking about. If you're just constantly miserable about the state of affairs and you let that take over your personality, people, you'll either just draw those sort of same people in you, but people don't like negativity by and large. They don't want that in their lives. It's a poison after a while. So you have to be careful not to let that poison in too much. It's sort of like keeping your work at work. You don't bring it home with you. Try not to an extent to bring the bad things home with you. Of course, they're directly affecting you. Like this awful fire in Malibu in Southern California, a paradise, unfortunately, looks like it's been wiped out. The towns have been wiped out 3 hours away. It's awful. What can you do? Well, you can donate to like the Red Cross, AmeriCares, organizations like that need the money. If you're local, obviously you can give help locally. People need housing, people are donating water, they're donating their time, things of that nature. There's things that you can do if you're involved there. But if you're across the country, you're far away, and these things are getting to you, realize that there are people that are trying to, you're not alone in your thoughts about these bad situations. So other people are taking care of it. These I'm talking about these huge, larger than life things. I'm not talking about like, you know, your dumb neighbor down the street whose dog's barking too much. That's your problem. You probably have to deal with that. But if there's something happening across the world, you can't necessarily deal with that. You can't focus on it too much. You just can't. It's just counterproductive. It's not going to accomplish anything. So I know that's sort of a weird answer, but if you want to just give general advice about stress, which I've had from time to time, being on the internet, breathing exercises are great. There's peaceful, you know, meditation apps on your phone even that give you exercise and sounds. I'm a big proponent of yoga. I should do it more than once a week. The gym, talking to others, talking to a friend, things of that nature. Going to the movies, go see Bohemian Rhapsody, things like that. At Maz 8891, Brian. Any crazy Black Friday experiences or stories to tell? Not really. My dad would go out with my uncle on some Black Friday deals. They're usually like cheap, small TVs. I think it was like Tops was like a regional electronics store chain, at least in New Jersey, New York, like kind of like PC Richards, but smaller. I remember he went out. It was literally, it used to be Midnight Madness. It literally used to be midnight. Now they open the stores, you know, at 4 p.m. on Thanksgiving. But it was weird when they had Midnight Madness sales. So you would go out at midnight, 11:30, and they had doorbusters. Excuse me. So I remember one time my dad came back with my uncle, and there was like a cheap 20-inch TV, you know, for like $150. Now, back in the 80s, that was like huge. Like a 20-inch TV cost like $500 back then. So TVs were expensive. Now you can buy a 20-inch LCD for like $100 in today's money. So I remember my dad coming back at this point saying, oh, they had like five of them there. And that's what happens with doorbusters sometimes. But no, I don't necessarily have any bad Black Friday sales. I stopped doing Black Friday probably in my mid-20s when I tried to go to Best Buy to get a computer deal. I was like, this is bullshit. It's not worth my time. And then after that, you had Cyber Monday, and you had all the online deals and Amazon with their insane deals. And that was the end of that. And I feel bad for these big businesses going out of business, like Circuit City and things of that nature. But God, going out and standing those lines really, really is awful. People would go out. My local Toys R Us and my local Best Buy, they would be outside at least 3 a.m. in the morning for Black Friday. Sometimes that was enough. I think one time we tried going out even like 8 o'clock when it opened and the line was out the door. It's just nuts. So yeah, I haven't been to a Black Friday deal in an actual store at least since I lived in New Jersey, 2008, 2007 at least. Okay, this is from, who I don't know who left this one, but he said the man, Becky Lynch. Wow, Becky Lynch has been on fire on SmackDown. And I'm recording this before SmackDown. I don't see what happens, but she was on Raw. She invaded. She beat up Ronda Rousey. Of course, this is all storyline stuff. She got her nose broken by Nia Jax, who, by the way, is very dangerous in the ring. Nia Jax has only been wrestling for a couple of years. She's still very green. She still has injured more wrestlers than she should. And she straight up punched Becky nose in the face, bloodied her nose. The good news is that it was an awesome visual in that blood all over her face. The camera was on her, and it was like a star-making moment, like when Stone Cold had the bloody crimson mask WrestleMania 13 against Bret Hart with Ken Shamrock refereeing. I guess lost all the audience members because talking about wrestling. But Becky Lynch, she was always a hard worker. The crowd always got behind her. They turned her heel. She's like now a tweener. They realize, oh, wow, she's now the most popular wrestler, arguably, maybe not on the planet, but for WWE, she is beloved now. She's like the new Stone Cold, so to speak. And she calls herself the man, which is funny as hell. But I think she, latest news I saw, she's out of Survivor Series because of a concussion due to that getting smacked in the face by Nia Jax. It was like a full-on punch. I know accidents happen in wrestling, but that, a full-on weight-behind punch, he got decked when you see the replay on that, which is a shame. But she'll come back stronger, and then, you know, she's a superstar. You got to let her run with the ball, as I say. WWE sometimes WWE screws up these situations. And when someone gets too hot, they throw some cold water on them. This is from Lexi at P Rationality. With the holidays coming up, any fun to share memories or things you missed from yesteryears? Like specials or foods or anything that isn't as frequent nowadays? Well, I still love the Italian pastries for Christmas. I do miss the Sunday circulars. They still probably have them with the, you know, the Sunday ads with the funnies, with the comic section. I miss looking at all the Super Nintendo games I never would get, or all the Nintendo games and all the Chuck Norris figures. I miss, though, the Sears catalog and the Service Merchandise catalog, because they had everything. I mean, they had everything, not just toys and video games. They had everything from, you know, BB guns to computers to lawn furniture. It was like a 500-page Bible. But the toy section was insane, because the dioramas, especially the Sears catalog and the Service Merchandise as well, that was more, I think, Northeast Service Merchandise. The diorama displays they had for all the toys for like G.I. Joe and Transformers were beautiful. So it wasn't just like a regular Sunday circular. It was like, oh, black and white pictures mocked up from an artist. The G.I. Joes and Transformers were like on like a dirt fort, or they were on like a diorama model, and it was great. So I remember making my lists, and I know I was greedy as a kid. I would ask for like two of each toy brand, which made life harder for my dad. That's why, looking back, I had like two Chuck Norris figures. I had a couple wrestling figures. I had a lot of G.I. Joe and a lot of a lot of like He-Man figures, but the most of the toy lines I had no more than two. I'd like one or two Thundercats because I asked for everything. So I should have had less Thundercats and folk. I had one Air Raiders toy. I had two Dungeons and Dragons figures when I was a kid. I think worth money now. So that's what I miss. I miss going through the circulars as a kid, but more importantly, going through like the catalogs. That's just you can't beat that. And making that Santa wish list that you realize when you're 6 years old was a sham because your dad didn't take off the Kmart and Bradley's price tags off your toys at Christmas. So by 1987 rolls around, 7-year-old Pat was like, "Yeah, there's no Santa. My dad's not even trying to hide it." Wasn't even trying to hide it. My mom either. They were just like, "No, just give me your list." I was like, "Okay, thanks, Dad. That's magical." Finally, at Mia 7118, do you miss New Jersey? You know what? I go back to Jersey once a year now. I go back usually in September for a show, a video game con. I've been there 3 years in a row. My parents unfortunately moved, so there's less of a reason when they're out of the state, moved to Pennsylvania. I miss the people. The people just see my people. They're more the attitude, not necessarily. Yeah, they can be over the top and abrasive, the East Coast, Jersey, New York. Yeah, I'd be like, yeah. But at least I know it's like it's particular to that region, that sort of attitude and personality. So it's like my people. I'll never forget that. And I miss obviously the diners. There's some diners in San Diego, but not too many. And there's not many that are open 24 hours. So I miss the diners. I miss the pork roll slash Taylor ham. Leave a comment below whether or not you think pork roll or Taylor ham is the right one for you. And I miss the Jersey Shore. I do miss the Jersey Shore. I went back 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago? No, I went back a year and a half ago with my girlfriend at the time. I won her a Frog Bog plush frog, which I think she still has it. She didn't throw it away when we broke up. I think she kept that. I think she tossed my. I think she no. She gave back my NES I gave her, but she broke it. Not her fault though. But we're still friends though. We still hang out. I'm still there. We both love each other. But yeah, that's what I miss about New Jersey. Are you from New Jersey? Maria asking the question just out of curiosity. People must be from New Jersey, asking that because being the expression of it's New Jersey is a nice state to be from is nice. But there are beautiful parts of New Jersey. New Jersey does get a bad rap at the end of the day. New Jersey is not all the Meadowlands and not all Elizabeth and not all refineries on the Turnpike. That's the middle of New Jersey. But there's some beautiful parts in Jersey. Cape May is beautiful. The Pine Barrens, Northwest Jersey is you have mountains and you have lake systems, things in that nature. There's beautiful parts in Jersey. And obviously, you love the malls. You gotta love the malls. All right, that's it for this not so common podcast, guys. I got some announcements to make real quick. Oh yeah, before I talk about that, I know people are upset about the Ian and I talking about the mobile Diablo game on the CU podcast, and I'm not sure if Ian wants to address that when we come back with the CU podcast next week. I'm gonna wait to see what he says. And we're gonna decide from there. At this point, people are unsubscribing from my YouTube channel. It is what it is. I expected backlash to some extent. I'd be stupid to think if that wasn't going to happen. But it's happened before where people get upset at me for things I say in the podcast and or Ian. Usually when Ian's not at the podcast, when PewDiePie stuff, when he made an ass out of himself. And I commented on that a while back. Coleco Chameleon stuff when I got overzealous back then. This stuff happens. You can't have it both ways. You can't put yourself out there to entertain people, potentially piss them off, and not expect these things to happen once in a while. So it is what it is. I'm not sure. I'll talk to Ian about. I'm sure Ian has some comments about it, but it is what it is. That's all I can say about it right now. We'll see what happens when we record on Tuesday. All right, that's it. If you like this podcast, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Stitcher, wherever you listen to the podcast. You can like the podcast. You can leave a comment. And you can let others know how much you like it, especially on YouTube, where I'm beloved right now. You can follow me on Twitter. Finally, if you want to help support me directly on the Not So Common podcast and my other endeavors, I have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/PatContry. Thanks, everyone, and I'll see you next time.